24. As soon as Jake saw the place, he understood two things. First, that he had seen it before, in dreams so terrible his conscious mind would not let him remember them. Second, that it was a place of death and murder and madness. He was standing on the far corner of Reinhold Street and Brooklyn Avenue, 70 yards from Henry and Eddie Dean, but even from where he was, he could feel the mansion ignoring them and reaching for him with its eager, invisible hands. He thought there were talons at the ends of those hands, sharp ones. "It wants me, and I can't run away. It's death to go in, but it's madness not to. Because somewhere inside that place is a locked door. I have the key that will open it, and the only salvation I can hope for is on the other side." He stared at the mansion, a house that almost screamed abnormality, with a sinking heart. It stood in the center of its weedy, rioting yard like a tumor. The Dean brothers had walked across 9 blocks of Brooklyn, moving slowly under the hot afternoon sun, and had finally entered a section of town which had to be Dutch Hill, given the names on the shops and stores. Now they stood halfway down the block in front of the mansion. It looked as if it had been deserted for years, yet it had suffered remarkably little vandalism. And once Jake thought it really had been a mansion, the home perhaps of a wealthy merchant and his large family. In those long-gone days, it must have been white, but now it was a dirty, gray, no-color. The windows had been knocked out, and the peeling picket fence which surrounded it had been spray-painted, but the house itself was still intact. It slumped in the hot light, a ramshackle, slate-roofed revenant growing out of a hummocky, trash-littered yard, somehow making Jake think of a dangerous dog which pretended to be asleep. Its steep roof overhung the front porch like a beetling brow. The boards of the porch were splintery and warped. Shutters, which might once have been green, leaned askew beside the glassless windows. Ancient curtains still hung in some of these, dangling like strips of dead skin. To the left, an elderly trellis leaned away from the building, now held up not by nails, but only by the nameless and somehow filthy clusters of vine which crawled over it. There was a sign on the lawn and another on the door. From where Jake stood, he could read neither of them. The house was alive. He knew this, could feel its awareness reaching out from the boards and the slumping roof, could feel it pouring in rivers from the black sockets of its windows. The idea of approaching that terrible place filled him with dismay. The idea of actually going inside filled him with inarticulate horror. Yet he would have to. He could hear a low, slumbrous buzzing in his ears, the sound of a beehive on a hot summer day, and for a moment he was afraid he might faint. He closed his eyes, and his voice filled his head. "You must come, Jake. This is the path of the beam, the way of the tower, and the time of your drawing. Be true. Stand. Come to me." The fear didn't pass, but that terrible sense of impending panic did. He opened his eyes again and saw that he was not the only one who had sensed the power and awakening sentience of the place. Eddie was trying to pull away from the fence. He turned toward Jake, who could see Eddie's eyes, wide and uneasy beneath his green headband. His big brother grabbed him and pushed him toward the rusty gate, but the gesture was too half-hearted to be much of a tease. However thick-headed he might be, Henry liked the mansion no better than Eddie did. They drew away a little and stood looking at the place for a while. Jake could not make out what they were saying to each other, but the tone of their voices was awed and uneasy. Jake suddenly remembered Eddie speaking in his dream. "Remember, there's danger, though. Be careful and be quick." Suddenly the real Eddie, the one across the street, raised his voice enough so that Jake could make out the words. "Can we go home now, Henry, please? I don't like it." His tone was pleading. "Fucking little sissy," Henry said, but Jake thought he heard relief as well as indulgence in Henry's voice. "Come on." They turned away from the ruined house, crouching high-shouldered behind its sagging fence, and approached the street. Jake backed up, then turned and looked into the window of the dispirited little hole-in-the-wall shop called Dutch Hill Used Appliances. He watched Henry and Eddie, dim and ghostly reflections superimposed on an ancient Hoover vacuum cleaner, cross Reinhold Street. "Are you sure it's not really haunted?" Eddie asked as they stepped onto the sidewalk on Jake's side. "Well, I tell you what," Henry said, "now that I've been out here again, I'm not really so sure." They passed directly behind Jake without looking at him. "Would you go in there?" Eddie asked. "Not for $1 million," Henry replied promptly. They rounded the corner. Jake stepped away from the window and peeped after them. They were headed back the way they had come, close together on the sidewalk, Henry hulking along in his steel-toed shit-kickers, his shoulders already slumped like those of a much older man, Eddie walking beside him with neat, unconscious grace. Their shadows, long and trailing out into the street now, mingled amicably together. "They're going home," Jake thought, and felt a wave of loneliness so strong that he felt it would crush him. "Going to eat supper and do homework and argue over which TV shows to watch and then go to bed. Henry may be a bullying shit, but they've got a life, those two, one that makes sense, and they're going back to it. I wonder if they have any idea of how lucky they are. Eddie might, I suppose." Jake turned, adjusted the straps of his pack, and crossed Reinhold Street.